welcome you to our first triple crossover podcast of Talk More Talk, When They Was Fab, and Two Legs, Paul McCartney podcast.
So, Kit, why don't we ask them how many of them have heard at least one of our shows?
Have you heard of at least one of our shows, or if you're all familiar? Okay, excellent.
All right.
Yes, I know Tony has, yeah, for sure, and I know Austin, familiar with
Austin,
Talk More Talk.
Austin, you know Two Legs or no? I know
Two Legs also. Excellent. Okay. So we have a really interesting, we think, anyway, topic that we've been working on, it's related to the release of course, the documentary that we all loved that came out last Thanksgiving, Get Back. But we are going to talk a bit about that, but we also talked about the sort of evolution of Beatles documentaries in general. And that got us talking about how, the different documentaries that really grabbed us, you know, when we first started becoming fans. And even more interesting, we talked about how Let It Be was kind of the first Beatles documentary. And what was the latest documentary that came out? Get Back. You know, so it's kind of a full circle. As I usually don't quote Oprah, but it is a full circle moment. That's the only time you'll ever hear me quote Oprah. So that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about, and we're going to use three documentaries as sort of our anchoring points here. Condensed Cream of the Beatles, The Complete Beatles, and Anthology. And then later on, we want to hear what your favorite documentaries are. So before we get started, I'm Kit O'Toole. I am the host of Talk More Talk. Andy Nichols, he is the host of Two Legs. And Ed Chen, the host of When They Was Fab. So we're going to kick this off with Ed. So Ed, take it away.
I guess I can just start with this because I'm the eldest by just a little bit over Kit here. My introduction to the Beatles documentaries, I was too young for Let It Be when it first came out. So mid-70s, and actually over in the next room, there's a poster for, they used to go around to the dollar cinemas, and they would show Beatles and Shea Stadium, often combined with Star Trek bloopers and something really bizarre like that. But they would also put in little short films in between, sometimes the videos, and one of them which came out was this thing called Braverman's Condensed Cream of Beatles. It's about 15 minutes. It was actually originally created for Geraldo Rivera and Good Night America or something. And there's actually a halfway decent copy on YouTube now from Geraldo. For the longest time, all we could ever see was just this horrible washed out sepia tone thing. But the thing about Condensed Cream, it was really the first time I'd ever seen the footage collected. The footage came from the collection of Ron Fermanak. Ron Fermanak, who is best known to most of us for working for Apple in, I guess that was the beginning of the DVD era. He produced a stereo version of Shea and remastered Shea, which is still not out there.
Yeah, that's right. Still not out.
And he's the one who really did at least some of the restoration pre-anthology. But in this 14 minutes, not only do you get a bunch of really cool transitions and animations to keep your eye on the screen, you get lots and lots of Beatles footage. You know, just little 10 or 15 second clips of it, but it's enough for you to be able to get into the scenery, you know, to be able to see what the content of all this was. I mean, at the time I hadn't seen Shea, and to just see even 30 seconds of Shea, that was amazing. And then, of course, later other people were to take the film and splice in longer segments, which I also got to see.
So what year did we did it first, Geraldo, first show?
They produced it for Geraldo in 73. and then 74 was when it came out theatrically. Okay. So the Geraldo version is a very slightly different edit. And the theatrical version actually has both opening and closing credits, which they were to which were not produced by the time Geraldo originally aired it. Now, Chuck Braverman, he in later life would become nominated for an Academy Award. So I mean, he's a well-known director. He married a woman named Lennon. And as we found out from Jay Bergen's book, John had seen Condensed Cream. I don't know if it was on Geraldo. I mean, that's around the time that John and Geraldo were hanging out, or if it was theatrically, or if someone had just sent it to him. And John was actually planning to produce a rock and roll commercial with Chuck Braverman.
For the rock and roll album.
Right.
And let it get scaled back.
And it's described in Bergen's book. But that never happened because, well, read Bergen's book. Basically, the lawsuit happened, so Capitol had to rush out their version of rock and roll, the real rock and roll, and John was not able to do the promotion he really wanted to do with the record. So, anyone remember Condensed Cream? Anybody seen, other than Al? We know Al's seen Condensed Cream.
I didn't know until, like, Ed told me about it, like, two weeks ago.
I didn't either.
Did not know about it until Ed messaged us in our chat. It was like,
we used to show it at the early Beatlefest.
Mark used to show it?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, we were talking about documentaries, and I'm like, what's, never heard of this. Checked it out, and it was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And what I learned from my last showing through, for all these years, I'd always thought that one of the cuts is to two blondes and a brunette. I'd always thought that was the Charlie's Angels. And you look at it, and they look like Charlie's Angels, but it's like, wait a minute, that's before Charlie's Angels, so it's just some random footage.
And it probably is very hard to contextualize this for a younger audience who might be watching or listening to this, but, you know, of the time, especially in the 70s, to get anything on video, to watch something in the past, I'm sure as Al can attest, that was probably like gold. To be able to have stuff on video and watch it, or even come to a fest and watch it, it's something that we now can just take for granted, but it was a major deal to see Beatles on film in a setting, whether either in the cinema or at an event. It was so, you know, this documentary, as I learned in just a couple of weeks I learned about it, pretty special to have it available to show just in a couple short years of the Beatles being done, that you've got these great clips of Shea Stadium and everything assembled in a rough, you look at it now 50 something years later,
yeah,
and it looks awful, but at the time, I am sure, as Al could say, it was like
nobody's seen it since it was first shown. Then so the other thing is, what could people see other than Condensed Cream? There were things like David Frost's TV shows. So, I mean, he produced a Beatles special. So, you know, there were hour-long things. But the thing to remember is that Beatles documentaries treated the Beatles as an ongoing thing at that point in time. It was always, oh, are they going to get back together? When are they going to get back together? And when they talked about the solo years, it was the solo years as an extension of the Beatles. So, all right. So now we're going to move on to really what I would call the first major documentary of our lifetimes. That's Complete Beatles.
Take it away, Kit.
All right. Yeah, this is the documentary that really got, you know, as I was learning about the Beatles, I started getting into them in about 85. And this was the documentary to watch if, you know, you wanted to learn more about the Beatles. And, you know, it's just kind of amazing looking back on it. It came out in 82. And, you know, it's interesting to think about, you know, that this was independently produced. I mean, this was not an official, you know, sanctioned documentary because, you know, a lot of, you know, insiders, you know, gave interviews for this. I mean, just an astounding, I mean, George Martin gave an interview, and it's, but at the end, Jerry Marsden,
Billy Preston,
Billy J. Kramer, exactly, who's here, and Alan Williams. I mean, it's so great that we have this because, you know, so many are gone. And I still say that I wish it were in print. It's, of course, been long out of print. I wish it would go back because I've often said, you know, well, we're going to be talking about anthology in just a minute. Andy will be covering that. Anthology's great, but I've often said if you want to introduce somebody to the Beatles and give them an overview of their story in just a couple hours, the Complete Beatles did an awfully good job.
Unbiased, too. We'll get to it a little later.
It's amazing. So we've gone from 15 minutes to 90 minutes to 7 hours.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I thought the Complete Beatles did a great job. Malcolm McDowell, of course, from best known Clockwork Orange and many other films, narrated the film, and you know, I thought, you know, did a wonderful job. I still remember his narration when he talked about Magical Mystery Tour, the film. That was the best. When he said, you know, they decided to, you know, gather a bunch of, you know, people, some, like, you know, I forget how
they
put
it.
But,
phrase it, yeah. To get people in the countryside to film whatever happened, but unfortunately
nothing did. Yeah, I mean, it was like, yep, that's it. That summarizes exactly what it was. But, you know, there are just so many wonderful moments of, you know, Jerry Marson, who, of course, you know, came here to the Fest many times, showing, you know, demonstrating Lonnie Donegan's
Aggie Dackie,
as he called it, you know, how his sounded, and then how the Merseybeat groups kind of rocked it up. I mean, there are just some, you know, wonderful moments. I think Horst Fascher was interviewed in this. I mean, my gosh, your Horst Fascher talk about, you know, Hamburg? I mean, you know, and how, you know, rough it was. They talk about the, you know, the band, the Beatles' final tour, and, you know, how it just, how you can kind of see in that. I mean, they really don't hold much back about how wild it was, and you can kind of see why they wanted to stop touring. I mean, how just, you know, dangerous it had gotten for them, for their personal. What, Tony?
John was getting death threats then.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And they really show that. And so I just always thought that it was just as I said, an excellent overview. And I watched that documentary. I mean, I remember renting it from my local video store in, you know, the mid-80s, and then I bought my own copy on VHS, still
kind,
have it.
Be Kind Rewind.
Yeah. Be Kind Rewind, that's right. And
it aired repeatedly on PBS during that time.
Yeah, it did, and so I know some people here are like, what? But this is old school. And as I understand it, when Anthology was being created, I think Paul bought all the negatives and all the rights to it, and the odds of it ever being released again, I think, are pretty low. And it's a shame because, you know, it's really, I think it still holds up. And it's a lot shorter than Anthology.
Yes, it is.
It really is. But when Anthology came out, boy, the excitement was huge.
Well, Kit, before we move on to Anthology, we could probably talk a little bit about Long and Winding Road.
Well, that, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Of course, the Beatles first did try, you know, there was an intention to create an official Beatles documentary with Long and Winding Road, which was going to be, and you can find some very rough cuts of it online. You know, you can, if you know where to search, you can find it. And it's fascinating to watch the early cuts because it's basically just there's really no narration.
No narration at all. It's a collection of footage. The interesting thing about Anthology or about Long Winding Road is you started to see they were already thinking of doing clever things, clever intercuts between, and you know that's what kind of gets lost in the Anthology is they're all there, but like when they showed the introduction to Sullivan in Miami, you see the guy jumping back onto the diving board because they show that footage in reverse. They were kind of doing that stuff as early as in Long and Winding Road.
Yep, exactly, and some split screen stuff, yeah. and you know, it looks clunky now. It's you know, but again, these were rough cuts, but that got delayed and delayed and delayed. But Long and Winding Road eventually became anthology. So, Andy, you take it from here.
Sure. So yeah, the interesting is that it kind of bookends their stories to kind of tell their own story, because the Long and Winding Road is then with really commissioned by Neil Aspinall to, you know, write the story right at the point of the breakup, saying, hey, this is ending. We better tell our own story, which 25 years later finally sees the light of day. Amid lawsuits and everything else, and I was 14 when the anthology came out in 1995. So,
oh, you were a baby.
Yeah, that's all, I'm 41 now, so I do remember the Complete Beatles. Obviously, I'm kind of in that weird age. I'm not like 70, but I'm not 20 either. So I kind of have a little bit of both. But the anthology for me really was the jump all in, and there's no turning back. And I can remember it as clear as day, November of 1995. It would originally premiered on ABC, ABC, as you remember, Al, over three nights, over Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving.
The third night was on Thanksgiving night.
That's right. It was on, yeah. But I remember being around Thanksgiving, and it was only 6 hours initially.
It was only
six. Well, home video, we got eight. DVD, we got even later. But having the Complete Beatles as my kind of entry point as a younger fan, and watching it, and then being, okay, this is going to be the mega, this is going to be the story to end all stories. You know, and yes, you could look at it now as a historian and as a researcher and say, well, it's a little one-sided because it's them telling their own version, whereas you know, people in the 80s saw the Complete Beatles and was like, independent. You can look at things a different way. And we talked about this a little earlier on our academic panel. It's like, does the history mean anything less because it's being told by the participants? And according to Ken Womack, if it's not factual, then yeah, you really can't go by it. Doesn't take away what the anthology is and still remains for me just a source of great footage of all these concerts and footage that we had not seen previously before it was out there. The footage of the Beatles playing in Germany, you know, singing Nowhere Man. You know, all these clips that you got to see uninterrupted clips now of Paperback Writer and Rain. All within that. So again, pre-internet age, pre-YouTube age, to have 6 hours of this stuff, and the three of them being back together, and to record a couple of new songs too at the same time, Nirvana. I remember talking to my dad about it, and he was like, who is a first-generation Beatles fan? And he's like, you're this excited for this now? This is how it was every time a Beatle record came out, or a single. So amplify that in the 1960s in real time. I don't think I would have made it because I was so excited. You know, I taped it all on VHS. I must have played Freeze a Bird back 50 times after it ended, like literally shaking on my couch.
Remember the countdown?
The countdown.
Oh, yeah, as great as.
Remember the countdown, Al? Mm-hmm. The countdown. New Beatles song in.
Yeah.
10. No, it was like New Year's Eve, like waiting for the ball to drop.
Yeah, I was just like this. Yeah. Come on!
Waiting.
As great as Get Back was, there was no single moment like sitting there waiting for Free as a Bird to come
waiting
on.
For it. Now, does that mean less now? Because obviously now, if you had bootlegs in the 1990s, you probably knew Free as a Bird. I'm sure seasoned people, better Beatles collectors knew that then. I was at my fandom, I wasn't collecting bootlegs yet, so I'm like, what's this Free as a Bird? I don't know what this means, other than that it was a John song. So to see it, to hear it for the first time was incredible. The Real Love, of course, we knew, or I knew, because it was featured in the John Lennon Imagine film. So it's like, well, how are the Beatles going to take a song that's already out and make it their own? So, you could look at it and say it's the sanitized version of the Beatles' history. But I still think 25 years later on, it still has merit. It's their lasting, you know, video document of their history. And like we talked about, right or wrong, even though it might be wrong, that's what they want, and that's what's out there now. So it needs a Blu-ray release, though, I would think. Don't we? Or streaming? You know, I think we need that. You definitely need a streaming or a Blu-ray upgrade of, You know, and it came out on, so it came out, it got a home VHS release in around 1997 now? Or 8?
A year and a half after, yeah.
About 97?
In 96, September of 96.
When the 8 box, the 8 VHS box set came out.
And Laserdisc.
Which was great because you got more content on the home video release than you did on the initial broadcast on ABC. So you got 2 more hours of extra footage.
Yeah.
To watch.
Well, you actually got more because, I mean, it was 6 hours on ABC, but it was only an hour and a half because there were commercials.
Good
so
point.
It was, you know, less than 5 hours of content.
Right, with the advertisements, watching it, but you know what? At the time, and I'm sure you guys, you didn't care. We were all glued to our TVs to see, you know, here are the Beatles in the current day talking about their history and disagreeing several times on that history. But the moments where they're together in the studio, especially at the end there with Abbey Road, with George at the mixing console.
Oh, yeah.
That's just priceless stuff. So to me, even though it's the sanitized, it may be a little one-sided, sentimentally, the anthology will always be kind of the gold standard of documentaries, even though I still think The Complete Beatles has a lot of merit, as it should. But the anthology for me is that will remain the gold standard for the rest of time in terms of documentaries. If maybe, and again, we can maybe turn it into the, you know, take the conversation into the pros and cons now if you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it better to have, well, what say you? You know, let us know. Is it better to have, you know, something, you know, sanctioned by Apple or something independent? I think more is always better. So I don't think there's one right or wrong answer. You can have a little bit of both to look at that. So I think more is better. I think it helps. And especially as history and time marches on, you know, if there's other viewpoints out there, then that'll always lead to future discussions and future, you know, so that maybe the story may not truly be finished.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are pros and cons of both, because like independent documentaries, you know, not sanctioned by Apple or authorized by the Beatles, you know, they can be great. There's that documentary that came out, I think it was in like 2011, called Strange Fruit, which was about Apple, you know, the creation of Apple and Apple artists, you know, the Apple label. Now, the cover, I don't know why they picked that cover. It is so cheesy. I mean, it looks like they just cut and paste some images and just slap them on there. I mean, it looks really cheap. And so you just look at it at first and you just think, oh, this is going to be just some, like, cheapy documentary. There isn't going to be any original music in it. You know that. They're not going to pay for the licensing the music. But it turns out it's actually quite good. It's a really fascinating look at the history of, you know, the creation of the label, the different artists they signed. There's some, you know, great interviews. So you can be really surprised by some of those independent ones. And
yeah, because you're getting information that you're not going to get in an Apple-sanctioned project.
Yeah.
So even though they're unofficial, you know, and I personally tend to stay away. If it's not legit, or it's not endorsed, and it has the blessing, I generally stay away. But I checked out after Kit's recommendation, and she was, you know, you're right on the money.
Yeah, I mean, it was
a lot of information.
Yep, exactly. So, I've also seen some really bad ones, you know, and as I said, when you're like, I don't hear any original music, what are we doing?
Staying with this one.
Yeah,
some
but,
cheap,
you know.
You know, like bastardized version of like From Me to You, you're like,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, but on the other hand, okay, so you think, okay, the authorized are the ones to go with, you know, and they are, you know, good, but you have to think about, too, what's their agenda here? Are we, you know, we're getting the story that they want to tell, you know? And so we're only hearing their side of the story. And, you know, is that really, I mean, I'm not saying they're lying or anything like that, but, you know, I mean, like, in anthology, I haven't seen it in a little while, so I'm trying to remember the Hamburg section, you know, were they cleaning it up a little bit, you know? I mean, were they, I don't remember.
Yes and no.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, I mean, things like that. I mean, I don't need, you know, extreme details, but you know, things like that. I mean, they may not want to share some of the things that happened that may not make them look so good. So it's, you know, there are pros and cons to both.
So you say that, Kit, but I mean, you look at the trends in Beatle documentaries in the last 10 years, you're still looking at people's opinions. You've got things like good old Frida. You know,
yeah.
Frida Kelly is telling, or in a lot of cases, not telling, incidents and events from her life with the Beatles. So, you know, it's her story, and she's free to tell it in the manner in which she wants to, but we all sit there, you know, it's great footage, but,
right.
You know.
There's a line that Beatle people connected to, they do not cross.
Yeah.
They might kind of talk a little bit, like Frida Kelly, who was actually in the inner circle, you know, but there's a fine line that they don't cross. And then if they're still in their good graces, that's why.
And then to take another example, there were two documentaries about the Beatles in India. There is Paul Saltzman's Meeting the Beatles in India, and there is the Beatles and India. You know, and they are very different things. Meeting the Beatles in India, Paul Saltzman is kind of telling his story. Now, he's got a lot of interesting facts which came after he left. He ended up leaving India right about the same time Ringo did, but he still tells the whole story beginning to end because he knew the people in the ashram, and he tells what people told him. And he's actually kept up with people like the real Bungalow Bill.
Yeah.
Whereas Beatles and India is much more of a separate documentary. It is a piece talking about the relationship of the Beatles as individuals and as a band with the country of India. And then the business of going to see the Maharishi is just part of that.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So let me throw this out to you guys. So what have been some of your favorite documentaries, or you know, what are ones and they can be ones we've mentioned, but if there are others, and it doesn't have to be just Beatles, they can be, you know, some solo stuff as well. What are some documentaries that you've seen that, you know, really you really enjoyed?
Wingspan.
Okay. Yeah. What did you particularly like about it?
It just sort of went. Well, that was like the first thing that really introduced me. Because I started off, I knew all the Beatles albums, and I'd seen parts of the anthology. But I saw Wingspan.
Mic,
and
you're
like,
oh wait, I am. Yep.
Yeah, that's what
you
can.
We want to hear you. Okay.
So I knew the Beatles albums because my mom had been showing me them my whole life, and then I kind of had seen parts of anthology on YouTube. And then I saw Wingspan, I think, on YouTube somehow. And that sort of hooked me. And then I would go back and, because it went through every, loosely, you know, here's the first Wings, and here's Ram, here's Red Rose Speeder, here's Man on the Run, and then here's Speed of Sound, everything. So that sort of made me interested more in each album, and I went more in depth after that.
Yeah.
So I'd say that's more about it.
Well, you know what they say about Wingspan? It's not really, there's no wings in it. It's just Paul and Linda.
Beyond that, there's also the fact that, you know, we were talking about anthology as being the Beatles' official story. Wingspan is made by Paul and his daughter, and his, at that time, his son-in-law. So,
but for somebody who's getting introduced, it gives a nice overview of the music, which is exactly what it was for you. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though it might be, you know, glossed over.
I liked all the ones that you have talked about so far, including the Wingspan one. I guess lately for myself, and again, I'm a much older fan, I'm a first generation fan, so I've been doing this a while. A lot of this, on YouTube, I love the Breathless.
That's
I think to me they've been some of the freshest and most ground changing things I've seen. I think we determined for a long time I had no idea. But there's one that follows Paul's career through the, you know, pretty much up until about, I don't know, 2019 or something.
Yeah.
And I keep looking for updates because, you know. And then there's a really interesting one focusing on Lennon McCartney with Howie titles those. So that's a series of about, maybe Andy, you know, like four or five of them, I think.
Yeah.
He goes even after John's assassination about how and how it's persisted.
Yeah.
But I think those are brilliant. I find them brilliant documentaries. I wish they didn't keep getting taken down and having to be redone. But I think they're great if other people who don't know anything about him, I check those out.
Yeah. That's a great point, Karen, because, you know, it's... Oh, Tony got a question, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's somebody now in modern world now making their own independent documentaries and putting them up on YouTube. Whereas, what you can do now, you know?
Oh, they're posted on YouTube, but the guy who's the creator is Breathless. One word.
Oh, he's tremendous. He's like feature-length documentaries, 4 or 5 parts long on Lennon and McCartney.
Oh my gosh, I'll check that out.
So, Anthology was my intro to the Beatles history. I got the DVD box set when I was 13, and I hadn't read any books on them yet. I just loved the stories in there, and I noticed, first off, that Paul viewed me on a boat in all the interviews.
Yeah.
I don't know why, and George was in the garden. And then a few years later, I saw the movie Imagine, John Lennon, and at that time, John was my favorite Beatle, and that movie is just so heartwarming. I mean, in all parts of his life, he's got the interviews and the Bed of the Peace, the hilarious part with Al Capp.
Yep.
And then especially the stuff with Sean and all that in the late 70s. I mean, I learned many years later that it was kind of a whitewasher of John, because it doesn't address the spousal abuse or the...
Well, do you know why that film was commissioned, right? Largely?
No.
The Albert Goldman book.
Oh,
the Albert Goldman book came out prior to this film, and there was a lot of backlash within the Beatles camp about this, and to repair John's image, this film was commissioned by Yoko to make that film, to make that documentary, and paint him in a nicer light because of the backlash to the lives of John Lennon by Albert Goldman was not good if you were a Lennon person or a Beatles person. So that's why that film is so lovingly well done, to your point.
Yeah.
And very touching and a great documentary.
Right.
But it was done for that reason.
Good to know. Another favorite of mine was the Scorsese film on George.
Oh, yeah.
The Material World, which is just fantastic. I love the narrations from his son, Danny. It's just beautiful. And they even mentioned the Monty Python part, too, where they show John Cleese and others addressing controversy with the film. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been some nice, I mean, in lieu of, there's not too many official or even big major name documentaries, complete Beatles anthologies for the Beatles, but there's been some great solo ones, you know, like Living in the Material World, Lennon, New York City, right, Ed? I mean, there's,
yeah.
You know,
U.S. versus John Lennon.
U.S. versus John Lennon. There's a healthy amount of documentaries just on John, Paul, and of course that one you mentioned, Tony, is, you know, I remember watching that on HBO, and that was, it was exhausting, but so well done.
Yeah. And I remember seeing the movie where Mary McCartney interviewed Father Paul.
Right, Wingspan.
Yeah.
Wingspan, yeah.
But yeah, the CD Wingspan is my interest.
Oh, he's got it.
Okay. And if we're going to talk about that, an accidental film studio, that is a really great documentary on George Harrison's, not so much his music, but his life with Handmaid.
Yeah, I don't know if we can sort of amplify the...
Oh, we'll hear it.
Yeah.
Poor Ringo doesn't have too many that we talked about.
Yeah, we were looking. Ringo, we couldn't really find anything on Ringo.
Yeah, Ringo needs a documentary.
I got 2 books on him.
Yeah. And but Accidental Studio, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good.
I just bought the India movie here.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Another 70s one that's really good that we found out in our research and planning for this talk was All You Need Is Love.
Tony Palmer
from 1975, which was the basis for the Ruddles film, All You Need Is Cash. And that's, if you want another 1970s look at a proper film, it's a little bit, it's longer than...
Well, it was, what had happened, so, yeah, there's Tony Palmer's documentary, and George has shown Eric Idle the original, the same cut of Long and Winding Road that is out there. And you can also see how Eric Idle picked little pieces of out
mimic,
of Long and Winding Road and turned them into the Ruddles.
Yep. Yeah, but there's anything pre-1980 is always worth gold.
Yes.
You know, and the Complete Beatles being the first one, really in the wake of John's passing, is also significant for that film, too.
I still have my VHS copy, and that's still how I see Jerry Morrison in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. I play that all the time.
Yeah. But
I had a very similar experience of feeling my own Beatlemania when the anthology came out. but there was also a documentary done by called Revolution by ABC when the Beatles one came out.
Yes. Yep. I know that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
We talked about that in our planning too.
Yes, we did. Glad you brought that up.
Great question. Yeah, in 2000, so the anthology's already been out for a couple of years. The book comes out in 2000, the Beatles anthology book is published in 2000, and then in the fall of 2000, we get this other two-hour, kind of condensed, kind of bastardized, if you like the word, version of the anthology.
Yeah.
But it was not really, but it was very, very short. I don't know, do you remember that?
I don't think I saw that. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's just called The Beatles Revolution, and I think it was actually time to come out to promote the publishing of the Beatles anthology book. To promote that, because the book came out 4 years after the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Here comes the book. Oh, let's also cash in on that and do another two-hour kind of, almost I kind of had to equate it to a modern documentary. It was kind of like 8 days a week, where it's celebrities talking about the Beatles, then so much the Beatles. And that's talk about disappointing documentaries, 8 days a week, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not a fan of that one.
It's kind of what Eric Idle parodied in the second Ruddles movie, which is also much worse than the first, if you've ever seen that.
Yeah, I've only seen the first one. I've only seen the first one, but yeah. But, it's been up and down with documentaries. And, we typed it out. Okay.
Oh, we typed it out. Okay.
Yeah, just read,
Karen. I wish my eyes were better. Oh, you okay? Yep.
Yeah.
Too many. Oh, Ed, you can read it.
Oh. I think when one came out.
When one came out. Which was also 2000,
mm-hmm.
Right? So
yep.
Who could forget Beatles 1?
Yep.
Yeah, so 2000. So you had that night. You had that nice kind of fruitful period there in the 1990s, live at the BBC
yeah.
in 94. The anthologies in 95, 96. Yellow Submarine 30th anniversary comes out in 99. So, and then Beatles 1 in 2000. So they really had a real late kind of renaissance there, 25, 30 years post their breakup.
So for a brief diversion, Andy, are you of the age when one actually meant something? I mean, I think I can speak for Kit and myself.
Yeah.
When one was announced, it's like, oh, do we really need another greatest hits album?
when one came out, I was out of high school, when I was 18 or 19 years old, so didn't need it then, because of course, even back then, I still had all the CDs. This is pre-Napster, anybody remembers what Napster was.
Yeah.
So pre-digital. So. I of course I had everything, but of course gotta get it, gotta get the CD,
yeah.
Gotta get the vinyl LP. You know, I haven't touched it in 20 years, but I bought it.
Yeah.
Just another, you know, and again it became a talking point, you know, because the Beatles are now relevant again in 2000, and it's again, you know, the sales of one I think outsold any Beatles album
by far.
By far.
Yeah.
So, which is incredible on the hugeness of. To me, which was the anthology, and that fruitful period that predated that. So, you know, yeah, so that was all around that same time. But I don't think there's any, 8 days a week might be the last big significant sanctioned documentary is 8 days a week, right?
Yeah.
Well, before Get Back. I mean, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
well before
yeah.
where,
yeah.
before obviously what just came out on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Which takes us to Get Back, bookending it.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, let's bring it back to Get Back, which is, we talked a little bit about this on the historians panel, but I think it's important to also think about this in terms of, you know, documentaries. You know, documentaries can really influence how, you know, we feel about the music, about the band. I mean, you know, they really, because of, you know, their viewpoint, and also, you know, Get Back, I think it's safe to say, you know, gave a new perspective on the Get Back sessions. You know, obviously, Let It Be cast, I think it's safe to say, a more negative light on those sessions. And then Get Back presented a more, you know, complex, I would say three-dimensional kind of picture of it. So, you know, as time passes, you know, it's been less than a year since Get Back's been out. So, you know, as time passes, what will and who knows if Let It Be will be re-released? We don't know. You know, it was supposed to be, but so far, you know, nothing. you know, what will be the effect? You know, how is this documentary Get Back going to impact Beatles history?
Is it going to rewrite history?
Is it going to rewrite history?
Yeah. Which, you know, again, you know, it could be a little historical revisionism, you know, trying to whitewash a very badly painted picture, which, according before this Get Back documentary, what has been, you know, it's been painted, especially because the Let It Be film originally. I mean, have you guys seen the Let It Be by itself? Yeah, you've seen it. So yeah,
it's very sad.
Right, so it's sad, right? So it paints a very, very sad narrative that has lingered in Beatles kind of history for years and years and years. Now you've got this 8-hour mega thing, anthology-esque style, on one project that was covering 3 weeks time. So is that an attempt to kind of, you know, whitewash the history, you know, and forget about it and say, well, as time moves on, we want this to be remembered as a more fond period. It wasn't so dark, it wasn't so gloomy, and it wasn't, as we saw. There were times when it was really great, but as somebody who's a kind of follower in the study of history, I also think we can't stray too far the other way and say that it was all, you know, pizza and fairy tales, to quote Paul. It wasn't. It was not a great time, but there was some good moments in it. And I think the 8 hours of documentary goes above and beyond to show those great moments, you know, to show the chat between John and Paul in the cafeteria with the enhanced audio that Peter Jackson cleaned up in the kitchen. Things like that, to really go out of his way to show, hey, it wasn't all gloom and doom. However, I think to echoing what Ken Womack said earlier in the panel, this was, you know, to be true to history, it was not a great time. But there were happier moments within these final days, and that's what the documentary Get Back shows.
But that seems to be where the Beatles are at. Really, you look at the 50th anniversary re-releases, what was the main talking point, other than we're cleaning up the White Album, what was it that Giles Martin and everyone else was saying? Oh, you know, we listened to the tapes. I don't hear any of this arguing. I don't hear them being in separate studios. You know, it's a bit of both. It was all part of the session. Nothing is all good or all bad.
No, and I think that says time marches on. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I was saying. I think, you know, Get Back paints a three-dimensional picture. I mean, it's because, you know, when it came down to it, when the Beatles were playing music, you know, they got along. I mean, you know, they had some arguments, of course. I mean, I think every band does. I mean, you know, I don't think any band is constantly saying, oh, you know, I agree with everything you're choosing, and that's of course not. But I think, you know, a lot of it was business stuff that you know, they disagreed with. But another thing I was just thinking when you were talking about, you know, with Get Back being 8 hours, you know, the other thing is Michael Lindsay Hogg was, you know, pretty limited as to, you know, time. I mean, he only had 2 hours in his film to tell a story, and Peter Jackson had the luxury of 8 hours, you know, and in streaming format. And obviously, Michael Lindsay Hogg did not have that luxury. So, you know, and it's just interesting to think about, though, you know, why he chose to tell that particular story. And, of course, the Beatles had, you know, they had input into the editing process. You know, were Paul coming in and saying, you know, I want this taken out and I want this taken out and put this in. And then John would come in and say, I want that taken out and I want that put in, you know. And so, you know, that's how we ended up with, you know, that cut. I mean, it's there are a lot of complicating factors here.
Yeah, I mean, we know that there's a, what, 3.5 hour cut, the one that was screened for the Beatles and families on the night of the moon landing.
Right,
so,
right, yeah.
And we know for a fact that three of the Beatles, who will be unnamed, said, there's too much John and Yoko in this thing. So,
yeah.
And I kind of wish we'd gotten that as an extra on the Blu-ray, because I'd really like to see what's in that 3.5 hour cut.
What's in that cut?
Yeah.
What's in that cut? You know, even so, I think the Get Back, I mean, I remember getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch it because my co-host partner wanted me to get up and then react to it on going on YouTube Live as soon as it was done when it dropped. But even watching it those first few nights, that magic was back. It was like a real big Beatles documentary is back. And that touching moment when Paul's sitting there going, and then there was two, like basically crying. I mean, does that not pull at your heartstrings?
Yeah, that's...
Sitting there realizing what's coming. And Jackson did such a great job with it. So it's their version of it, and I think obviously we're better that we have it. And of course, we're always going to want more. We always want more. You know, why isn't Let It Be included with that? And when we were at the New Jersey Fest on the Zoom call, you know, with Michael Lindsay Cogg, and they were explaining like, look, this is, you know, Let It Be is one film, and Get Back is a separate film. You know, Peter said, I'm not trying to whitewash and erase what, you know, Michael Lindsay Hogg was trying to do. These are two separate films telling two separate stories. And I thought that was pretty enlightening to hear him explain that, because a lot of people think, well, it's just being made to just erase what was done. That's not the intent. That wasn't the intent at all.
Yeah. And for the record, I really hope, I don't know if it'll happen, but I really hope that Let It Be will be reissued, because I think it's important to have both films. You know, because Let It Be, I mean, it is history. It is part of Beatles history, and I mean, you know, I think you need both sides of the story here, because there are elements of truth in that too, you know. So I know that probably, you know, the Apple camp would rather see Let It Be go away, but no, I think it you know, as a scholar, as historians, I think it's important to have both.
Yeah.
I really do.
Great. Yeah. I'm coming to you. One thing I do want to say is that both in video and audio, even Get Back is not exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, we know for a fact that Peter Jackson's sitting there going day by day, but you can look and listen to the Nagras.
Yeah.
He's pulling little bits from different days.
Yeah, sure.
Not completely, and not to misrepresent what was going on, but he tries to get a complete conversation, and sometimes that means that he's going to pull three sentences from 2 weeks in the future.
Yeah, that's some frenetic editing, and if you're Peter Jackson, you can do that, you know.
Thank you. Just to Kit's point, my recollection from having seen Let It Be many times, but many years ago, and then watching Get Back several times, is that I prefer Let It Be, and I know Peter Jackson, I think, consciously, so the rooftop is different, a lot of different shots. So, my recollection is that those in some ways were, to me, preferable, or I would love to have them both.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the very end, the Get Back doesn't have these fuller performances
right.
of Long and Winding Road
Let
and Two of Us and
yes,
Let It Be.
Right.
And
right.
Being, and I really want those back.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we need those as well.
Yeah.
And folks who never saw that, you know, again, I've only seen Get Back, the younger fans, so they have missed that. They don't know what they're missing.
Right, which, and Let It Be, so it really needs to be.
Aren't some of those in the OnePlus?
Long and Winding Road is in OnePlus, but to your point, Carrie, you want it to be included in the whole presentation of the documentary.
Because
especially those songs are mega songs that are part of the story.
Yeah.
You know, you want to see Paul sitting there with that beard and at the piano, hammering away. That's why we're here. You know, we want to see John plucking on a bass, not interested, sitting there, you know, playing bass to Long and Winding Road.
That's why we're here.
So we got time for just one more point here, which is, do documentaries shape our fandom and viewpoint of the music that we haven't heard yet?
I think actually it does, and I think Kit, you'll agree, because you watch a documentary unvarnished without any bias, and then somebody tells you something, you take it as gospel, right? And I think, and you brought this point up in our and I'll let you talk about it, but it was such a great point, it rings so true, because if you don't have any preconceived ideas and you don't know any of the music, especially pre-internet days, you just watch it and say, well, that song or that album is not good because, you know, John Smith said it wasn't. So I think documentaries can influence, maybe not as much as they used to, but I think they still can, you know, and depending on where you are in your fandom, I mean, if you, the footage is out there, you know, I know it's easily, you can, but if you want to watch the, you know, if you want to watch the anthology, you want to watch the Complete Beatles or Braverman, Ed's first thing, or the, All You Need Is Cash, it's out there. You know, if you follow the timeline of the documentaries and don't jump around, it, you'll see how the narrative changes as time goes on. So especially with, you know, the death of Beatles as they come into that timeline too. You see how the documentaries, and just like books, they change. But yeah, I think they definitely can change somebody's fandom if you haven't heard the music yet.
Absolutely. Well, and actually that example I gave at the very beginning when I said, well, what they said in the Complete Beatles about Magical Mystery Tour, and that kind of snide remark, you know. Well, I mean, I remember watching that, and I don't know if I had seen Magical Mystery Tour before I saw Complete Beatles. So, you know, I remember then finally, like, okay, I've got to see Magical Mystery Tour, but this isn't going to be good. And so, you know, I kind of went into Magical Mystery Tour expecting it to not be great quality, and well, you know, but now it's not great, but music is, and the videos.
You put on the spot. When's the last time you watched it?
Oh man, it's been it's been quite a while. Let's put it that way. But you know, but the documentary, you know, Complete Beatles did influence me that way. So I think, you know, that the way they're constructed, the viewpoint that they have, it can influence the way you feel about, you know, an album or a movie or even the music, the band itself.
Right.
Absolutely.
And to that point, 8 days a week. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if someone was just coming to the live Beatles with 8 days a week, what are they going to get out of that? It's difficult to say.
Celebrities talking about how much they love them.
Well, there were more celebrity interviews than interviews of Paul and Ringo and other people in the Beatles circle.
Absolutely, which is the problem I have with that documentary.
Very weird.
And the fact that they stick Hamburg 30 minutes into the film.
Right.
You know, if you're going to talk about the Beatles live, you'd start with Hamburg.
You have to.
I mean, again, that goes along with Apple's well-known distaste for our only existing audio of Hamburg.
I have a question for you guys, and then our guest. What else is out there that can be told that hasn't been told yet, documentary-wise? Beatles or solo? Your choice. What else is out there? What little kernel of, you know, Beatles history could be turned into a documentary? I have one off the top of my head that I think we could go into further, and they touch upon it in the anthology, and I always laugh when I look at this, because I didn't really know about this event until the anthology. And that was the Beatles' trip to the Philippines.
Oh, yeah.
And how they, you know, barely got out of there alive. That, and we have films on India, right? What about a documentary just on their trip to the Philippines? And Ringo and Paul, Ringo especially, and George were so honest in the anthology about the hatred they have for that country, not even going back since. So I think if they ever were to tell a story about, you know, the Philippines, that could make for a very interesting documentary, just from a Beatles perspective. But what say you guys?
Wow. Well, one I've always wanted, and I think it's going to be a reality in the not too distant future, is Al Evans. Because, I mean,
once we get Ken's book,
I have a strong feeling that's going to happen, because, you know, he's the one person, you know, that has, you know, such connections, and I mean, he's the inner circle that, you know, we unfortunately, you know, didn't get to hear much from, and thank goodness that's changing. So I would love to have a documentary on him. Oof.
And if you want to hear us talk about Mal Evans, Kit and I will be back tomorrow evening talking about Mal Evans.
Yes,
with
will.
Ken Womack.
Yep. So yes,
right here.
So, okay, Paul and Jane Asher. I mean, I'd like a book on that,
the book's
never going to come out, but someone could do a documentary, particularly, you know, we've got all of Jane's films. I'd like to see them cut back and forth between what Jane is doing, films of her stage show, interviews with people like, as a Star Trek fan, Patrick Stewart got to know Paul McCartney through Jane Asher.
Yeah, wow.
So, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there are enough people you know, maybe not Peter or the immediate Asher family, and maybe not the McCartneys, but there's still enough people who were there, who are alive, who would be willing to tell at least a version of the story.
All right, and unfortunately our time is up, so we want to thank you all for coming and for celebrating Beatles documentaries with us, and also thank you for listening to our shows when they was fab, Talk More Talk and Two Likes, and thank you for being a part of our show. This is going to be going up.
Probably on all three of our channels.
So you can check it out there. As Ed said, tomorrow we are going to be broadcasting from here again, but it's going to be When They Was Fab. And indeed, I'm going to be on there, and Ken Womack will be, and we're going to
try our best to bring in my co-host who couldn't make it to the fest.
Yep, yeah. We'll see. Hopefully the tech gods will be with us. And we're going to talk some more Mal Evans. So I hope you can join us for that. That's at, what time is that? It's at
6:30.
Is it 6:30 tomorrow?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
6:30 again right here.
Yep, right here.
And this next to the Apple Jams.
Yeah. You can't miss us. So thank you so much for coming.
Much,
thank you.
Thank you, Austin. Thank you, Tony. Karen. Mm-hmm. The few and the proud.
That's right. Thank you.